Good morning, Dr. Klein, and welcome to Insights for Health.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
An optimal immune system is always important, but it would seem even more so during this pandemic. Yet we've heard so little about it from our government health officials.
Yes, the approach seems to be very narrowly focused on one intervention, but a strong immune system is really what you need to ward off anything. A strong constitution, strong vitality, good health in general. The foundation for a strong immune system is really the ability of the cells of the body, especially the immune cells, to generate sufficient amount of energy from the food that we eat and the oxygen that we breathe. That's how we produce energy, and that energy is required by every single cell. We have 6 trillion cells, which are divided into different tissues and systems, which perform all kinds of functions. And foundational to the healthy functioning of any system in the body is having sufficient optimal energy. And when energy production is compromised, when it's insufficient, that's when our systems start failing, and that goes for our immune system as well. It is interesting that the people who succumbed to the current infectious agent and those who succumb in general to any respiratory infections tend to have multiple morbidities. We may have heard of comorbidities in the news. Well, it so happens that, you know, the number one comorbidity is Alzheimer's and dementia.
Now, what can you describe, doctor, what a comorbidity is, just for the sake of our audience?
Morbidity is just an illness, so having more than one illness at the same time. So perhaps you've contracted a respiratory infection, and at the same time you may have dementia, Alzheimer's, heart disease, diabetes. These are the most common comorbidities or coexisting illnesses that people who happen to die from the respiratory infection tend to have at the same time. So let's take dementia and Alzheimer's, for example. Where is it centered? It's centered in the brain and the nervous system. Well, it so happens that while the brain is a small part of our body, the amount of energy that it requires and that its cells would typically produce is 20% of the entire energy requirement of the entire organism, the entire body. Just a small part of our body needs such a disproportionate amount of energy. Under conditions of dementia and Alzheimer's, that is compromised, right? They're also known as type 3 diabetes. What's diabetes? Inability to assimilate glucose. Well, what's glucose? Glucose is a primary source of energy. So you can see when the ability to produce energy is lacking, then there isn't enough energy for the immune system. No, never mind just our brain or cardiovascular system or other systems in the body. Our immune system then lacks that energy to function properly. And so having comorbidities, having simultaneous illnesses at the same time, taxes the body so much that it doesn't have enough resources to divert to the immune system for it to ward off respiratory invaders, infectious agents, in an efficient manner. Does that make sense?
It does. So how do we optimize our energy, doctor?
Okay, so where do we get it from? We get it from primarily the food that we eat and the air that we breathe. Energy is extracted through oxygen from glucose or fatty acids. It involves multiple steps within the cells, within certain compartments in the cells, known as mitochondria. The extraction of that energy requires certain specialized protein known as enzymes, and these enzymes require helpers in the forms of certain minerals and certain vitamins. And so obviously having good quality nourishment, good quality carbohydrates and fats and protein is really, really important. Food that is dense in nourishment, that is dense in vitamins and minerals is really, really, really important. Conversely, avoiding food that can tax our cells, that prevents the provision of energy is important as well. So, for example, a very common type of food or ingredient that I advocate people try to minimize or avoid is vegetable oil, for example. Vegetable oil, which is rich in polyunsaturated fatty acids, well, for a long, long time has been promoted as healthy, unfortunately, actually diminishes the ability of our cells to produce the optimal energy that they require to function properly. So things like canola oil and sunflower oil, soybean oil, corn seed oil, all these types of oils, which are prevalent in household kitchens and in commercially made foods, potato chips, french fries, donuts, these types of oils actually limit the ability of our cells to produce adequate energy, and so those should be avoided. Another example of something that we shouldn't eat too much of is meat, for example. So meat is rich in a particular of amino acids. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. Of course, meat is rich in protein, but it also is rich in types of amino acids that are also detrimental to the production of energy. Too much methionine, for example, although it's important in small amounts, it is also known for promoting aging. And what's aging all about? Aging is about reduction in energy resources for our cells to work properly. All in all, optimizing nourishment is really, really important. Another thing that does limit the production of energy is excessive amount of stress. Stress can also affect our immune system and affect our ability to produce energy adequately.
How does stress affect immunity?
Generally, when there's a lot more stress, that's when people tend to experience more colds and flus, for example. And indeed, stress, again, suppresses our cells' ability to produce energy through the stress hormones. So there are different stress hormones that are produced during times of stress, and they interfere with the production of things like thyroid hormone, which is the hormone, the master hormone that initiates the energy generation process in the cells. What's interesting about when we tend to experience more colds and flus, when colds and flus tend to be more prevalent, is one, it's in the fall and winter times. And it so happens that the fall and the winter in Canada tends to be darker, right? The days are shorter, there's less daylight, tend to be darker. Of course, they're a lot colder. Also, we tend to spend more time indoors, and it's in closed spaces with poor ventilation that transmission of respiratory viruses and bacteria tend to be a lot more efficient. You know, it's not in the outdoors that, and usually in the summertime, we spend more time outdoors, we keep the windows open, there's more air circulation. So it's really that diminished circulation. All these factors, less fresh air, less daylight, and being exposed to more darkness and cold weather as well, all these factors also contribute to the increase in the stress hormones, which in turn decrease energy available for the immune system to do its work optimally. And of course, that's when we tend to have more colds and flus in the winter, in the fall and winter and early spring times.
Yeah, and then you add to that a pandemic, and then we have the lockdown and the isolations. Some people are experiencing the intimidation of getting the shot or else with the threat of losing a job. And there's a lot of fear associated. So that adds to the stress as well.
In a big way. Isolation and fear are such important and significant factors that affect longevity, period, in ways that most people aren't aware of. Studies that looked at the different determinants of longevity show that perhaps more than nutrition, isolation is far more related to and decreased life expectancy than even nourishment, nutrition.
Doctor, how do we counteract the effects of stress? There's some lifestyle choices that you suggest.
Stress is multidimensional, and there can be different sources of stress, mental, emotional stress. I mentioned poor dietary choices. The body perceives that as stress. It responds by producing the stress hormone. So there are different, darkness and poor circulation, all that. So there are different sources of stress, and each one of these sources need to be addressed accordingly. So when it comes to mental and emotional stressors, then you know, the proper steps need to be taken. Part of being human is to experience life with a certain degree of stress. Some people have it less, some people have more. But often we experience stress through our interpersonal relationships with other people and our families and friends and so on. And so addressing that in a proactive way can be very, very helpful. Learning to foster forgiveness, extending forgiveness to one another, and perhaps more importantly to ourselves. And so when I work with clients, that's a very important part of the health that I try to provide the resources to help them make peace with themselves so they can make peace with others as well. Stressed out body requires more rest, more sleep to recover, to repair, to replenish. So taking the time, and of course, with shorter daylight and greater periods of darkness, we tend to perhaps feel more sleepy, and it's important to honor that and to allow the body to repair and recover and rest. At the same time, because it's cold outside, people tend to stay indoors a lot more. And I think it's really, really important to take the time and walk outside in the fresh air, whether it's, short snippets of walk. It doesn't have to be a very long walk. It can be divided into several periods of walk of, say, 10, 15 minutes at a time for a total of half an hour to an hour. That's really important, really helpful. Getting that fresh air, getting that oxygen, which is really, really important for the generation of energy, for the extraction of energy from the food that we eat, that's really important. Ensuring healthy nourishment, that's also extremely helpful, as I mentioned earlier, to help mitigate the negative or harmful effects of stress on our body. And beyond that, nature has awarded us with wonderful gifts, different medicinal plants that are very effective at counteracting the negative effects of stress, at counteracting the stress hormones that can suppress healthy immune function and other health functions.
And doctor, you've created a new product. It's called Roziva Immune. And you have a comprehensive list of those elements in that product. And let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I'll have you go through each one of those products and discuss the benefits of each one for stress. Certainly. And for stress in the immune system.